Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until he takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes and coaches from their own mouths. My guest today, BYU baseball coach Trent Pratt. Hi, Trent. How are you?
I'm doing great, Shep. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very, very good. It's always good to see you. I'm sure that you get sick of seeing me as much as you do during the baseball season, so I really do appreciate you being willing to be stuck in a radio studio for about 45 minutes with me.
Never, Shep. It's always great to have you and Greg around, and man, you guys are awesome for us.
Well, we appreciate it, and it's certainly fun. Always looking forward to the baseball season, regardless of what time of year it is. Let's start there, and I realize the answer to this question probably changes whether you're in season or out of season. But give everybody an idea of what a general day in the life is as the head baseball coach at Brigham Young University.
Man, for me, like whether it's like we're in practice season, it's usually I try to get a workout in really early, around 5, because with kids and everything going on, it's if I wait till in the afternoon, it's not going to happen. So usually a workout, come home, make kids breakfast, take a couple kids to school, get the office around 8 or 8:30, and some guys roll in and want to do some early work or work on certain things in the office, and then, man, have some lunch, and then practice starts rolling in. Some early work around 12:30, team stretch at 1, and then from about 1 to 3, 3:30, we're on the field getting after it. So, and then afterwards, kind of talk about practice and wrap up, go home, and whatever my wife needs me to do when it comes to that time, I try to be there. Make some phone calls, recruits, that kind of never ends. So that's usually like a day in the life.
There may be some BYU fans that aren't necessarily familiar with Big 12 baseball. I'm excited for fans to get to know that conference and what it is in terms of a baseball league, because it's really, really good. Give everybody an idea of what the Big 12 conference is when it comes to baseball.
It's really good. It's one of the top, you know, 2 or 3 conferences in the country. You have teams every year going to the postseason, going to the World Series. I think TCU, Texas Tech, Texas, Oklahoma. I mean, they've all been to the College World Series in the last 4 or 5 years. And so, man, we got to work cut out for us. It's a big mountain to climb, and it's something we've been prepared for and letting guys know. And, man, we're ready to get out there and compete.
I had asked you this question before one of your fall games, actually, against the University of Utah. How different has this current offseason been versus the previous offseason when you got the full-time job?
I think just having a year under your belt, having a little more experience and knowing what to expect. I think last year some things were, you know, being the head coach is different than being an assistant. And so just kind of understanding how things work has been better this year for me. And having coaches around, and it's been like kind of a new staff. We had a couple things change, and that's been awesome. And so just understanding that I think has helped. It's helped me grow as a person and as a coach. And I've learned a lot last year. And now we're ready to get after it and go this year.
I told you before we started recording the podcast, I said this is going to be a little bit of this is your life. So this is kind of where that portion starts. So take me back to little Trent Pratt. What was life like for Trent growing up in the Pratt household?
Man, it was fun. I grew up, I'm the third of 6 boys. Bless my mom's heart, raising 6 boys that were all ultra competitive. All five of my brothers all played college sports, always played college baseball, except for my baby brother that I think he was the last one. So mom kept cooking for 6, but only one was left. So he got a lot bigger than the rest of us. So he played college football, but man, just great memories. Growing up, always wanting to be like my older brothers, getting dragged to practice, to their practices. My dad coached most of us growing up in basketball or baseball or football. And so I just remember being around them all the time and looking at my older brothers and just wanting to be like them. So
why baseball? Was it always baseball? Because you mentioned all of your brothers play baseball. The youngest ended up playing a different sport, as you just mentioned. But why was baseball the sport?
But I don't know. We all played all three sports growing up. I played all three sports till about eighth grade. And so I just think baseball kind of – my dad wasn't a baseball player. My dad was a high school football and basketball and then played at Utah State football for a year. And so I think as we got going, we just gravitated towards it and became good at it. We all played at least two sports in high school. And so I just think maybe that's something we excelled at the most. And so that's kind of how it went. I really don't know why. I loved it, but I loved basketball just as much. But it's just something I think that maybe we were just a little better at that.
Well, in high school, you were obviously a really good high school baseball player. You won state championship, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You were rated the number one baseball player in the state of Utah. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think so.
So, obviously, your high school career went quite well. What do you remember from high school baseball?
Man, just playing with your friends. I remember that the most, how much fun it was. Those are the kids I grew up with my whole life playing with. I was young, but I kind of matured early, so I was a big, strong kid, so I was always playing with kids older than me. And so I knew the kids 2 or 3 years old. I got to hang out with my brothers a lot. My older brother, Scott, was really good to me. I was a freshman when he was a senior, and I had just as many friends his age and I did my own age probably. He was great to tag me along and let me play. I was lucky enough to start in baseball and basketball as a freshman, so I got to play with him, which is cool. To have a chance to play with your brother is what was awesome. And so, yeah, those are kind of memories with that, I guess.
So you were actually drafted out of high school, 38th round by the Rangers. Ultimately, you decided not to go that route, and we'll get into that in a second. But what was that experience like of being drafted in high school?
Man, it was awesome. It was gratifying. I kind of knew I wanted to go to college unless it was going to be X amount of money. I wanted to go to college. And so just talking to, you know, getting advice from other people that have gone through it and advisors and scouts. And for me, that was the best route to go to college. And so, but it was, man, it was cool. I mean, scouts coming to games in high school. I was lucky enough to play like on the 18 under USA team, which had loads of major leaguers on it. And so getting that experience and knowing that, hey, man, I can hang with these guys was pretty cool. But then that senior season, having people roll in every game to watch you play was like there's pressure. You
sure
want to perform. And so I think that helped you grow up. And luckily I had my brothers tell me how bad I was all the time and it wasn't very good. So I was pretty humble. So that was good. But no, it was exciting. It was fun.
So you mentioned that you really wanted to play college baseball. So what was your recruitment like?
Yeah, I was recruited pretty heavily. I took back then you could take 5 visits and recruiting started late. It wasn't like it is now. I took all 5 visits as a senior in high school in the fall, like an uncommitted. So I visited Cal State Fullerton, Arizona, Arizona State, Miami, and Texas. And, you know, end up choosing Arizona State, which I think was the first time in my life I had to make a decision on my own. My parents didn't go on any of the visits with me. They were like, hey, this is your decision. You need to figure out what you want to do. And probably the first time I had to pray for something, like to get an answer to know like where I should go. And I'm choosing Arizona State. As a player, it I was down the lineup. I didn't play a lot. Maybe I didn't play great when I was there. But I always knew in the back of my mind that's where I should have been. I never doubted my decision because I remember the feeling I got when I prayed. And so I tell that story a lot to kids like, hey, it didn't work out for me great baseball-wise, but I knew I was in the right place. I didn't mean my wife there. So, like, looking back on it, it was 100% the right decision for me. I didn't play a lot as a sophomore. It made me realize how much I really loved to play and what I needed to do to get better, to get on the field. And so all those things, because until then, baseball was pretty easy for me. I was always really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I got there, and it was like, man, everyone's really good. But I tell our players all the time, hey, everyone here was the best player on their team for a long, long time. And now it's what you can do to separate yourself to become better. And I was behind a catcher that was, man, he was like the 2-time offensive player in the Pac-10. It was like, it was hard to get in the lineup.
Yeah.
But like I said, I knew the feeling I got that I should have been there. And so that was, I always had that to fall back on. And that gave me comfort.
Well, and as you mentioned, Arizona State was just part of the journey because that was not where you stayed for your entire collegiate career. What happened that ultimately led you to leaving Arizona State?
I just wanted to play, and I knew I needed an opportunity to go somewhere where I could get in the lineup a little bit more. And so I ended up – I had a brother that played at Auburn, and so I – back then you just had to get a release from your school, and it was you could transfer anywhere you wanted. And so talked to the coaches there, and they understood and were really good to me. Coach Murphy, he's now the manager of the Milwaukee Brewers. He was good to me because, hey, I understand we'd like you to stay, but you need what's best for you. Like, we understand that. And so I got recruited a lot again. LSU and Texas, schools that had talked to me before, came again, and I felt really comfortable going to Auburn. My brother had played there, and some of the coaches were still there. And so I ended up transferring there, like dating my to-be wife. So now I'm going – she had just graduated from Arizona State, and I was headed to Alabama. So I was like, I don't know how this is going to work out. But somehow, some way, that I don't know still – maybe I don't know why, but
– probably some more praying involved.
Yeah, she stuck with me for 2 years. And so – but no, and I love my time in the South. It was – fans are great. People were great. I got treated really good and had a chance to get on the field and play a lot more.
We will get to when Coach Pratt does turn pro. That's coming up next. We will take a quick break. We're talking with BYU baseball head coach Trent Pratt. This is the Deep Blue Podcast on BYU Radio. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast. My name is Jason Shepherd. So happy to be talking with the head coach of the BYU baseball program, Trent Pratt. Eventually, you do turn pro. So what was your experience like going through that, going from college and ultimately making that decision that now's the time to do this?
Well, that I'd have another option. Yeah. I couldn't go back to college again, maybe I would have. But I was eligibility ran out, ended up getting drafted in the 12th round by the Phillies. Actually got engaged that fall of my senior year, and so we had a wedding date set for June 28th, which would have allowed me, if we made it to Omaha, to play in the College World Series and then go home. So signed the Phillies. I told them I was getting married, said that's fine, went out, played for like, I don't know, 2 or 3, 4 weeks, a month, came home, got married, was home for about 5 days. My wife, Derice, was a grad assistant volleyball coach at Wichita State working on her master's. And so we decided that she was going to stay and go to summer school. And so she could graduate in January. So when the next season started, she'd be able to come with me. So went home, got married. We were together for 4 or 5 days. And she went back to Wichita, and I went back to Batavia, New York to play. So it was really like just dating long distance again. We've been doing it for, 2 years already. So not much really changed with that, except for we were officially married, and I played okay. I was probably a defensive first catcher. I struggled offensively. That, as a hitter, I always struggled. That was kind of, but the Phillies kept giving me a chance because I could catch the ball, flip down the right finger every once in a while, and they trusted me to catch big prospects and do that. So yeah, it was kind of wild that first year. Season ended around Labor Day. Came home for about a week, and then went back to Florida for instruction league for a month and a half, 2 months. So I've been married about 6 months and seen my wife, for a couple of weeks maybe.
Wow.
The Phillies were great to me. I love my time there. I love that organization. They did their best, to make me a big leaguer, and I just couldn't ever quite figure out offensively.
You had mentioned, you were engaged and ultimately married. Even though you were apart, what type of balance did Derice and the fact that you were married give you? How much did that help you through the ups and downs that everybody's going to have in a situation like that?
It helped a lot. Even when we dated long distance for 2 years, like she's my best friend. That's someone I could always talk to. She was super encouraging. Like my dreams were hers. She's really unselfish, and she wanted what was best for me. She knew, hey, this is his chance to fulfill his dream. And she was 100% behind it. I mean, she has a master's degree. The next season, she comes with me, and she's working at Bath & Body Works in the mall because, back then, minor league pay wasn't great, and we needed some extra money. Luckily, there's great members of our faith all over the country. And so we met a family in Florida that took us in. And so, man, I'm so thankful to the Petersons for taking us in, and we lived there in their house for a couple of years, and we were basically part of their family. And but Dries would get up and go work at the mall, and then in the mornings come to the games at night and kind of do it all over again. And so, man, to have support like that, to know that someone's always there and encouraging you. And she understood athletics.
Yeah.
Being, I mean, she was a D1 athlete, played volleyball at New Mexico State and Arizona State where we met. She had coached at the D1 level. She understood the time it took. Hey, why do you have to go to the field at 1 o'clock when the game's not till 7? Or she was like, hey, you're struggling. Don't you need to go like early? Don't you need to work on something to get better? But she's always my biggest fan and supporter. And she was always super honest with me too. Like she kept me in check and, you know, made sure I was doing the right things and becoming a better person as well.
How long were you in the minors then?
I played for, man, 3 full seasons, so 4 years.
So what ultimately helped you make the decision it was time to maybe focus on something else?
They kind of told me.
You got a little nudge.
Yeah, I was in Double-A playing, went back to the next spring training, was in spring training, and they called me in and just said, hey, listen, like we have a prospect, we're going to move up. You're not going to play very much. I just had twin girls the summer before and kind of just knew in my mind I wasn't playing professional baseball just to play in the minor leagues as long as I could. I wanted to play in the big leagues. And I knew being a backup or not playing a lot in Double-A, for me, I started a family. I couldn't spend 5 more years in the minor leagues and support a family and do that. So for me, I just knew it was time.
Did you have other opportunities in other organizations?
I got a couple phone calls that, hey, they wanted some, like, hey, you have a job in A-ball. But I'm just like, it's just not where I want to be. And I was at peace with it. I had a long drive across the country from Florida back to St. George, Utah, where we were living at the time. And I don't regret that at all. I knew, looking back, I have no regrets on my career. I gave everything I had. I don't see myself as unsuccessful because I didn't get to the big leagues. But, I mean, I laid it all out there, and that's all I could really, you know, ask of myself. I wasn't bitter towards the game or anything like that. I was offered a coaching job. The Phillies said, if you want to coach, call us. We'd love to have you in our organization. And I think at that time I knew I always wanted to coach. I think I wanted to coach in college more than on the professional side. And so that made me feel good. Like, hey, we'd love to have you here. We value you as a player, but we think you'd be an awesome coach for us. And so they'd offer me a job, and if you ever need something, call us. I was like, well, I need to finish school first. So that was kind of my goal, is to go back and try to finish school.
You had mentioned that when you made the decision that you were at peace, there are a lot of guys that I don't know if they can say that, because that was the end-all, be-all. And when they move away from that, it's really, really hard. Where do you think that peace that you felt came from?
It came from some prayer and some thought, for sure. And I just think I knew, I don't know, it's hard to explain. I knew I wanted to be around my family. I knew I missed my 2 little girls that were not even a year old. And I knew for me to provide a life, man, I wanted to be a big leader more than anything. It's my dream since, man, as long as I can remember. But I also, I guess, was self-aware enough to know that, hey, you're older, and there's some young kids coming up that are probably ahead of you right now. And that's a tough pill to swallow. But also in my heart knew that, hey, I don't want to play one game. I'm not going to get to the big leagues playing 1 or 2 games a week. If I'm going to get the big leagues, I need to play every day. And I didn't prove to the Phillies enough that I could do that. And so, and I relied on my coaches with the Phillies too. I talked to them a lot. I had a lot of good friends and grew up with the coaching staff there, and I confided in them during that time. And so that's why, like, it wasn't an easy decision, but when I made it, I knew it was the right one.
What was it like for you to, look, we all kind of go through this in our lives sometimes, at different times in our lives, but, you know, you had been this athlete, and then you add husband to the mix. What was it like to add father to the mix? What did that mean to you when your girls were born? Who, by the way, are now about to be collegiate athletes on their own.
That was awesome. It's a crazy story. We've been trying to, you know, get pregnant for a couple of years. It didn't happen. The day before I was leaving to spring training, we had our first ultrasound, and they said, you're having twins. And so we're kind of like, whoa, like, I'm leaving tomorrow morning. And the plan was there's a good chance I was going to be in AA in Reading, Pennsylvania that year. There was a doctor back there that I was, you know, that I knew was an OBGYN, was a member of our faith. So the plan was to go have my wife, Drew Sajid, come with me to Reading and have the baby there. Everything was going to be great. That didn't go as planned. I would always drive. I'd stop in Auburn for a couple of days to work out with some friends and former teammates. And, man, I got out of working out one day and I had like 15 missed calls from my wife. I'm like, oh, something's up. Kind of find out she'd met with a perinatologist and they were high risk. And so she was going to have to be in the hospital or something, you know, for a while with these twins. And so coming to Pennsylvania wasn't going to be a good option. So she ended up going to San Diego where she has family and was checked in the hospital, I think at, 26 weeks. And they delivered the babies at 34 weeks no matter what. If they can get them to 34 weeks, they delivered them. And so lucky enough, I said our faith is awesome all around the world. I ended up living with Dr. Bob Rogers in Pennsylvania. Was able to talk to him about what was going on. My wife would call or he'd ask, hey, what's going on? How's Dries doing? What's going on? And so it was comforting for me to have someone there that could explain to me kind of what was going on. Or I'd spend my mornings, you have a lot of downtime at home. I spend my mornings in Barnes & Noble's reading through books. You know, but you know, Shep, you have kids. It was crazy. I got to fly home. I think minor league baseball gave you like 3 days off. So I flew home. Morgan and Marley were born at 34 weeks and in the NICU. And that's life-changing. Seeing these two little babies come out and they're about, you know, both around 4 pounds. And on oxygen, when I left, they still were breathing on their own. It was hard to leave.
How do you do that? You're literally going to the other side of the country.
Yeah. Thank goodness for family. She had a sister that lived close, two sisters that lived close, and her parents were there. But it could also go to her. She was with those two little babies for, they were born June 1st. I came home for the All-Star break for a couple of days. And she was with them till, Labor Day, after Labor Day when the season ended. She always teased me because I got home and they were sleeping through the night. About a week before I got home, they started sleeping 6 hours through the night. I'm like, this isn't that bad.
It's like, what were you complaining about?
Yeah. But she's my hero. She's willing to do anything for other people. And she's willing to do anything for me. And she's willing to do anything for our children. And that helps a lot. I don't, looking back, Shep, you know how it is. Sometimes you look back and it's like, there's something else helping you get through those times. Awesome teammates. The family that took me in, the Rogers family that took me in, man, it's a blessing. I still talk to him. He moved to Whitefish, Montana. He came to our games at Gonzaga. Last year I hadn't seen him in, 17, 18 years. And it was like, pecked up, right? Like I just moved out. And so, you're super blessed with people in your life. And when you look back, how grateful you are to have those. And I'm sure you say, like, you wonder how you got through some tough times.
Yeah.
Like, look back but it's made our family and marriage so much better because we did go through some really hard times and with a good attitude. And just, hey, whatever it takes, you just do whatever it takes. That's what it comes down to.
It's really what it comes down to. So your playing career is done. The family life really kicking in.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do next?
I knew I needed to finish school. I knew I wanted to coach. Chris Finwood was one of my assistants at Auburn. He was head coach at Western Kentucky. He called and he offered me, hey, I can pay for your school if you want to move out here. We had bought a house in St. George at the time. My wife was helping out at Dixie College as an assistant coach. My younger brother was playing there. And Coach Littlewood he offered me a job. He goes, I can pay for your school if you want to help me coach here. So I'm like, hey, that works out. The housing market kind of took in a crash during that time. So we're like, yeah, two little twins. I knew I could work. It would just seem like a more stable option to stay there. And so I stayed there. I knew I wanted to coach. And so he paid for my school, and I coached for a couple of years until I graduated. And then a full-time job came open.
Well, and so you're doing that. You obviously don't know what opportunities are ahead of you. Could you have even imagined the opportunity that was just around the corner for you?
No, because I think at that time you worry about what's right in front of you.
Yeah.
I mean, I was sending out emails, you know, to coaches trying to do things, and I'd known Coach Lillard for a while. I played for him when I was young, when I was like a freshman in high school or eighth grade on a travel team. And so I was around. I was able to work out there while I was playing, so I had a relationship. And, man, I'm glad that he gave me an opportunity. Hey, I can pay for your school if you can help me coach. I knew I needed to finish school. Hey, that's a way to get my school paid for and still be around the game.
What a blessing that is.
Yeah.
It really is the best of both worlds, because you left your playing career because you wanted to finish school. You knew that coaching was something you wanted to do, and you get it at the same time.
Yeah.
You get both of those blessings at the same time. What an unbelievable story of perseverance.
Yeah. And I worked at Fabulous Freddy's Car Wash in the mornings from about 8 to noon and wiped down cars. I did that as a minor league player in the offseason to make money. And then, man, I would do lessons Monday through Thursday from about 5 to 9 o'clock to make ends meet. My wife ran a volleyball club down there that started small and got pretty good size. And so it's kind of what we did. Like I said, you look back and it was a lot, but that's what needed to be done at the time. My wife knew I wanted to coach, and she was all, you know, even when I got an assistant job at Dixie, it paid about $15,000 a year. Gave us help, gave us benefits. I was also a groundskeeper. I'd take care, you know, like the block around the baseball field. I was in charge of those grounds, mowing and fixing sprinklers and doing all that. And so I look back and I'm super grateful that I went through those times. It's humbling, and to know that, I mean, a lot of head coaches can go back and say, like, what they went through to get where they are. And I'm grateful that I had to go through hard times. I'm grateful that it wasn't easy.
I'm immediately taken back to, you know, you've been back to now Utah Tech as the head coach of BYU. And I wonder what that moment was like to sort of come full circle to all the things that you had done down there, and now coming back as the head coach of BYU to those same fields and that same area. That to me was probably a surreal moment for you.
Yeah, I was grateful. Going back, I was grateful that I was there. I'm grateful that I had those opportunities. I'm grateful the school and Coach Lillard gave me those chances. That's kind of how I viewed it. Like, I'm humbled and grateful that I had that chance to do that.
So let's go through, you guys won a lot of games at Dixie mm-hmm. State, and eventually Coach Littlewood gets the job at BYU. And you follow him up here to Provo. Was that an easy decision? Was there anything that you were maybe contemplating otherwise? Or were you always going with Coach Littlewood up here to Provo?
I wanted to come to Provo. I had some other opportunities at the time to leave Dixie, but it wasn't right. I knew I wanted to coach in Division I, and I was on kind of like my last year of like, hey, you know, making $15,000 a year. I had three kids at the time. I had an accounting degree. And I was close to saying, like, I'm just going to go get my master's in accounting and go to work. That's kind of where I was at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't keep doing what I'm doing for the rest of my life. Like, as far as, like, financially just living that way, if I want to have, you know, to support my family and do that, I can't keep doing this. And that opportunity happened that year. And I'm grateful for Coach for believing in me and bringing me with him.
In April of 2022, Coach Littlewood resigns, and then you take over as the interim head coach, and everything happens so fast. What were you thinking at that time when everything is just sort of happening around you and everybody just kind of goes into reaction mode?
Mm-hmm. Man, I was just trying to be there for our players. I knew they were going. It was hard for them too. And so I feel like me at that time was just to be there for them and do the best we could to finish the season. And that's, I feel like we did a good job with that.
How stressful was that on you personally?
It was stressful. but knowing you have a good support system, knowing that, man, I love those players and I feel like I had a good relationship with them, and knowing those guys had your back meant a lot. And knowing I had support at home, whatever's going to happen after that, I feel like I did a pretty good job at, like, leaving that out and not worrying about it.
Yeah.
Like, I had a job my main job was for the 35 guys in that locker room, and that's what I want. I wanted to be there for them. And whatever happened after that season, man, I know that I could go back with no regrets and live with it, knowing that I was there for them during that time.
One of the things, and this moment has stood out to me personally since it happened, and it's one of the things I'll probably remember for the rest of my life, but I remember when that season came to an end, you and I were in Stockton, California. We were at the WCC baseball tournament. BYU had just lost to LMU. The season was done. We were doing our post-game interview on the radio, and I asked you about the future and what it held for you as the interim coach, and I remember you told me, you said you didn't know, but you wanted the job and hoped that it would all work out. Take me back to that time and what you were thinking with nothing but unknown in front of you.
At that moment, I was still thinking about the loss. I was still, you know, frustrated and kind of sad that we lost. And I was worried about, like, that team. And because there was unknowns for them, too. Like, are you coming back? I'm like, man, I want to, but I don't know yet. And so that's kind of what it was. Like, and it's hard not knowing. But I knew, hey, we did the best job we could. And if I did or didn't get the job, I had no regrets about how we went about it to finish that season.
So what was that? It wasn't that long after you ultimately ended up getting the job, but what was that process like waiting to get the thumbs up that you were going to be the guy?
It was stressful, not knowing, getting some calls from some other people asking what was going on. But like I said, it's just one thing I've learned is, man, I can only control what I can control. And sometimes that's hard, but I know I'm at peace and a lot better when I just put my head down and if I have to write it down, hey, what do I have control over today and what do I need to do? When my focus is on just that, it gets me through. It's easier to get through tough times. And so talking to my wife, and it's like, that's what I was going to worry about. Like, what can I do? And that's what I'm going to focus on and be all in on.
So what was that moment like when you realized that you were going to be the head coach at Brigham Young University?
It was exciting. It was a dream come true. To be a head coach at a Division I school, man, that was always my dream. And well, obviously wasn't expecting it at that time. I had opportunities. I had interviews for you know, a job or two while I was an assistant, and it just, things weren't right. But I love the school. I had a good friend talk to me one time and said, Trent, what are your dreams? I was like, man, I want to be a head coach. He goes, I get that, but he goes, could you be an assistant at BYU the rest of your life and be okay with it? And I was like, I thought about it. I'm like, yeah. Like, I'd be... And he just said, just keep doing what you're doing then. If you're always looking for the next job, you won't do a good job where you're at. And so I took that to heart. You know, three or four years before I was named the head coach, is like, I'm just going to do the best job of what my role is right now and not worry about what else is out there. And that really helped me knowing that. But, man, I love being at the school. I love what it stands for. I love the type of kids we're able to recruit. And so I'm just super thankful that, you know, that the school, man, trust me to do that.
Even when you were an assistant, your family was always in the stands. I wonder, what does that mean to you to know that with all of the ups and downs that can happen during a game and all of the stress that's involved in you know, in collegiate athletics, what type of strength do you draw from knowing that all you need to do is maybe step out to the top step of the dugout, turn to your right, and you can see your family sitting there supporting you? What does that mean to you?
Well, you know, Chad, that means more than anything. I mean, all this can go away, and if I have them, I'll be happy. There's nothing more important than those seven people. That means the world to me. And I think that helps me stay grounded and know what's really important. Hey, I want to win more than anybody. And we're going to win. But at the same time, knowing that they're there and they support me and I support them, if all of it went away and I still had that was still intact, man, at the end of the day, that's all that really matters.
One of the other cool things that you are able to do is you have your boys around the program a lot, whether it's practice, whether it's games, as bat boys. How important is that to you to be able to spend that type of time with them. Even though you're working and you have a job to do, to be able to just be around them in that environment.
It's the best. I think they live kind of like a dream life. I think every kid wishes they could be running around in the dugout and hanging out. And I'm thankful for our players at how good they treat them. They're my kids' heroes. They love them. And they know them by name. They know all of them. They might know more about them than I do sometimes. I come home and my two little boys, Blake and Tug, will rattle off all these things about them that they're in the locker room and things they're doing and talking about. And it's awesome. And I love that I can bring them and do that. And our athletic department, the administrators are great. I remember, Tom Holman and Brian Santiago told me, hey, bring your kids. We want them to be with you. We want them around. We want all that. We love coming in and seeing your kids around. And so I'm grateful that it is like it's a family thing. And I can bring them. My wife was out of town last week with my daughters and my little boy's like, it's awesome when dad's here. We don't have to go to school all the time because I just took him out of school Friday and they came out the field. And like, yeah, mom, dad doesn't make us go to school.
Are you the softy in this situation?
I think maybe with that, like if I can bring him to the field and hang out, like, I mean, they're in elementary school. I mean, they can miss a couple days and hang out with dad. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. They're going to remember that a lot more than probably whatever the math assignment was that day.
Yeah, for sure. I would hope so.
Yeah, certainly. Well, we mentioned this earlier in the podcast as we begin to wrap things up here with Trent Pratt, the head coach of the BYU baseball program. We mentioned your daughters are now going to be collegiate athletes. They have committed to play volleyball at Weber State. And you're the one that's used to going in and recruiting players and being on that side of it. First of all, what does it mean to see your daughters achieve this type of success, but also to be on this side of it where you're going through what, parents that you talk to are going through?
Yeah, it was kind of surreal being on a couple of recruiting trips with them and sit back and thinking like, man, what questions do I have for these coaches? I've never been on this side.
Yeah.
It's awesome to see their hard work and what they've always wanted to do since they were little. I mean, they grew up in the gym. My wife has ran a club or coach, so they've grown up in the volleyball gym their whole lives. And to see, like, their dreams, what they want to do come true is awesome. It sucks they're leaving. I don't tell them that. I tell them it'll be a great day when they leave because I think I'm trying to lie to them and make myself feel better. But when I went back and when I thought about it at the end of the day, and I tell recruits this, hey, I've been on that side when I talk to our parents, and there's a couple things that I would want, like a coach to coach my daughters. And one, I want them to care about them as people first. I want them to care about, like, as they're daughters of God. I want them to treat them that way. I want them to coach them hard. I want them to hold them accountable. But when practice is over, if they need something, I want to trust someone that's going to be there for them. And that's how I want me and our staff to be. Hey, we might coach you hard on the field. We might get after you. But when practice is over, it has no bearing on what we think of you as a person or what it is. Like, hey, you might have practiced bad that day. Your effort was really bad that day. But we still love you and you're an awesome kid. And be able to separate those two things. And so I tell parents, like, that's my hope and goal as a coach is I'm going to help your kid get better. I'm going to treat him with respect. I'm going to hold him accountable because he's going to do things right. Because that's what I want a coach to do for my own kids. So it was kind of cool sitting on the other side to realize, man, what really do I want for my daughters? And at the same time, I'm like, well, then I should want that with the players I coach as well.
Well, Trent, I have had the pleasure and the opportunity to get to know you over, it's probably been at least 7 years.
Yeah.
I've known you. And it has been a pleasure to get to know you, not just as an assistant coach and now the head coach, but as a person as well. You're a good man, Trent Pratt, and I want to say thank you so much for doing this today. It's been a pleasure. It's always fun to talk to you, especially getting an opportunity to do something in a setting like this.
No, thank you, Shep. The pleasure is mine. I appreciate everything you do for BYU in our athletics, but especially what you do for baseball. It means a lot having you around, and, man, know how much we love and appreciate all you do for us.
Well, I appreciate that. I want to thank my guests once again, Trent Pratt. My name is Jason Shepherd. Ben Hall and Josh Bergstrom produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.